Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. Among the authors in whom the staff at EQMM take the most interest are those who begin their careers in the pages of our magazine. This month's story is by such an author. After being shortlisted for Britain's Crime Writers Association Marjorie Allingham Short Story Competition, which is open to both published and unpublished writers, Helena Edwards debuted in EQMM's Department of First Stories in June of 2015. Since then, she's had fiction published in the anthology The Starling and Other Stories. Here she is reading her EQMM story, If Anything Happens to Me.
Now don't go all morbid, Mum. Karen sighed and shifted her position on the sofa in her mother's front room. Josie was ensconced in her favourite armchair. The largest chair in the room was empty, as it had been ever since her husband's death. He had filled it so completely, a can of beer in one hand, a remote control in the other. It did not seem right that anyone else should sit there. She still felt like asking the chair for permission when she switched on a soap opera. I want to make sure that Georgie will be... Don't you worry about Georgie, Mum. He'll be fine. I just wish you'd get out a bit more. When did you last get your hair done? I don't have money for things like that. You know that if you're short, all you've got to do is ask. This room of yours could do with a makeover. She looked round at the heavy red curtains and the oil painting of a girl on a swing, her white lace dress brushing the long grass. The curtains have been up for ages and they're all faded. And what about getting a new carpet? No, it's a good carpet. Well, it may have been once, but it's terribly warm. We could have a look in the sales. It needn't cost the earth. It's not the money, it's the upheaval, people coming into the house. Josie shuddered. Big dirty boots. Come and stay with us then. Georgie would love it. I could never do that. The lady down the road went to stay with her sister, and the house got burgled. £5,000 they took, and all her jewellery. Well, she shouldn't have had so much money in the house. Karen's voice softened. I know, Mum, you don't want to change things that remind you of Dad, but he wouldn't have liked to see you let yourself go the way you have. He was always so proud of you. Josie smiled at the memory. When I was younger, people used to turn in the street to look at me. I know, I've seen the photos. You could have been a model. She glanced at her watch. Now it's time I was off. I need to collect Georgie from playgroup. You will be all right, won't you? Yes, I'll be all right. You could do with at least getting some proper heating sorted out before next winter. That old paraffin heater, I'm not even sure it's safe. And so with a quick sandalwood-scented kiss, Karen let herself out, leaving Josie to huddle by the fire in a home cluttered with memories. He stepped out on the porch as she arrived back from the shops. Even in the shadows, even before she heard his familiar husky voice, she knew him at once. Unable to speak, she stared up at him. Surprised to see me, Josie? No, she wasn't in the least surprised. She'd known that he would be back one day. He took the bags from her before she could protest. Those look heavy. Let me give you a hand. Nice place, this. Quiet and private. Her hands shook as she turned the key. He carried the bags through to the kitchen, filled the kettle, and switched it on. You look tired, Josie. Sit down in there. I'll make us both a nice cup of tea, and we can catch up on each other's news. I was sorry to hear about Brian. She cleared her throat. Yes, it was a shock. And how are you, Mike? It's been a tough few years, I won't deny that, but it's all behind me. Now I can start again. From the kitchen came the sound of cupboard doors opening and shutting. I'm looking for something to have with our tea, Josie. A drop of whiskey, maybe. Where would I be finding that now? I don't have any drink in the house. No? Brian always used to keep a good cellar. But I suppose he never got round to sorting out a proper pension fund. I manage. He strode into the front room, handed her a mug, and looked about him as though trying to guess the value of each item. He picked up the cut glass fruit bowl, weighing it in his hand. then put it down and picked up a silver candlestick, squinting at the hallmark. "It's a little treasure house in here, all right. No one would guess from the outside." He started to pace the room, like the nervous, half-grown lad she remembered, with too much energy for his slender body and a tendency to develop twitches around his eyes when he hadn't slept. But he was heavier now, and he seemed taller, or had she shrunk? His jeans were tight, his shoes worn. He picked up a silver-framed photograph, taken during the last cruise they went on, 14 days around the Canaries and Azores. Brian in his dinner jacket, smiling and suntanned, and a Josie in silk organza, skirt slit to the thigh, high heels, and crystal hoops sparkling above her bare shoulders. "So you enjoyed the high life before his sad demise. Got through a bit of cash then, I dare say. I could just see Brian in the casino, knocking back the champagne. Good old Brian, eh? I always looked up to him. Like a dad to me, he was. Believed in me. Gave me a chance. He was very fond of you, Mike."
"Yeah. He never came to see me, though, did he? I was out of sight, out of mind. He was too busy living it up on the high seas, by the looks of things."
Mike sighed. "Never mind. My real dad never came either, whoever he is, nor my mum. It must have been tough."
"Oh, you don't know the half of it, Josie. But I'm a survivor, like you. And now I'm moving on. But before I do, where's my share of the cash?
I don't..."
He took a step forward, towering over her. "You have to admit it, I'm owed. If I hadn't kept quiet, your old man would have been doing time as well. I want what's due to me. It's only right."
"But I never knew anything about that side of things. I left it all to Brian."
"Oh, yeah. Ask no questions, look the other way. What you don't know won't hurt you." His voice hardened.
"But you knew really, didn't you? When the police came round, asking where he was on such and such a night, don't tell me you never put two and two together.
And he did it all for you, you know. My Josie wants a new kitchen or a jacuzzi, he'd say. Nothing but the best will do for her. Piano lessons for the kid, ponies and gymkhanas, bloody elocution lessons. Don't tell me you didn't know where the money came from."
"But I didn't. I didn't think... Mike, you killed that man. Do you really think I wanted that?"
"Well, I never wanted that to happen either. The jury believed me. I only meant to knock him out, not kill him. Stupid bastard shouldn't even have been there. So, the cash, where is it?"
"I haven't got it."
He frowned. "Don't tell me it's in a bank." He paced the room, looking around him. "It's hidden here. Somewhere in the house, isn't it? Not under the bed, that would be too obvious. First place a burglar would look. It'll be insulating your loft, or in a baked beans tin. Just tell me, and I'll be out of your hair." She did not answer.
He picked up another silver-framed photograph of a smiling girl in a purple dress, sitting in a limousine and holding an 18th birthday balloon. His voice softened as he swung round, fixing Josie with a steady gaze.
"And how is Karen these days?"
"You wouldn't." She sounded shrill, her fists clenched instinctively.
"Wouldn't what?"
He frowned, staring at her. She had forgotten how blue his eyes were.
"You don't think... Oh, Josie, surely you don't think I was threatening to do you or your lovely daughter any harm? What do you take me for?"
He sat down in the empty red armchair, leaning towards her. One hand, with bitten fingernails, rested lightly on her knee. She found her voice.
"That was Brian's chair." "I don't want to be tasteless, Josie, but he's not here to sit in it, is he?"
"Nobody sits in that chair," she said. "It was Brian's." She would give anything to have Brian back again, keeping her safe.
"You're a reasonable woman," Mike said softly. "I know you'll do the right thing."
"All right." She took a deep breath. "I'll see what I can do, but I can't lay my hands on a whole lot of money just like that. I'll need a couple of days at least."
"A couple of days." He got up, zipped his anorak. "I'll be back then, Sunday, 4 o'clock. You take care, Josie, especially round that heater. You can get a nasty burn off those things." As soon as he had gone, Josie made a phone call. Her hands were still shaking. "Steve, it's Josie." "Josie, lovely to hear from you. How's the family? I hear your Karen had a little boy." "It's them I want to talk to you about. I've been thinking, I want George to have a good start in life. Go to university, be a doctor or a lawyer. I sometimes wonder if only Brian had had an education."
"That's the trouble with our time of life, Josie. The if onlys and the too lates.
I want things to be different for Georgie. Karen looks after him well, but she's a spender, not a saver, and I want him to have a future. If anything happens to me..." Her voice trembled, and for a moment she could not speak.
"Now then, Josie, what's the matter? This isn't like you. Has something happened?"
"It's Mike. He's out of prison. He came to see me, demanding money. He even threatened Karen.
The little scumbag!
He's going to come back on Sunday. I don't know what to do, Steve."
"You've done the right thing, telling me. I'll come over Sunday."
"I'd be very grateful. But you won't hurt him, will you?" I felt sorry for him, in spite of everything. With his background, he never did have much of a chance.
"Don't worry, Josie, there won't be any unnecessary violence. Brian and I, we never hurt anyone, no more than we had to. That's what young idiots like Mike don't understand."
As Josie went upstairs to bed, that phrase, unnecessary violence, went round and round in her head. She had always known Brian would not have stopped short of violence if anyone, for instance, had threatened her. If she was honest with herself, that was part of his appeal. Not for him, the daily 9-to-5 grind endured by her parents, subservience to a boss, politeness to customers, and all for barely enough money to provide a respectable existence. Not for him, the saving up, the money doesn't grow on trees attitude they had tried to instill in her. When she was with Brian, she had only to hint that there was a piece of jewellery she wanted, and it would be hers, without delay. They had never accepted him. In spite of his unfailing charm towards them, and the luxuries that his generosity had provided after their retirement. When had she first seen the dark side of the man she had married? There had been no blinding flash of insight, just a growing unease, as motherhood opened her eyes to the dangers of the world. An armed raid in the local grocery shop, no one injured, but the young girl behind the counter never returned to work, suffering panic attacks and flashbacks. Burglaries, which gave children nightmares. It was incidents like these which kept Josie awake at night, while the timbers of the old house creaked and the radiators cooled, and she thought about victims and tainted money. On Sunday evening, Mike arrived, wearing the clothes he'd had on 2 days before, and smelling of sweat and beer. Steve presented him with a thick envelope. Mike looked inside, then looked up angrily. "What's this meant to be?" "Full and final settlement, young man, which means bugger off and don't come back." "This isn't anything like enough, not after what I've been through. It's an insult." "It's as much as you deserve. It's all you're getting. And if you have any sense, you'll use it to get as far away from here as possible." Mike appealed to Josie. "What am I going to do, Josie? How do you expect me to get by if you don't help me? What sort of employer's going to take me on with my record?" Pity twisted her heart for a moment, but did not shake the resolution she had come to after 2 sleepless nights. "I am sorry, Mike, but the money that Brian left me is needed."
"I'm the one who needs it," he shouted, his face twisting with anger. "Your life's almost finished. I need it now." "Don't speak to the lady like that."
As Steve took a step towards Mike, the young man suddenly lashed out, kicking Steve's leg from under him so that he fell onto the paraffin heater. In an instant, Mike was on top of him, holding his hand against the hot wires of the cage, making him scream with pain.
"Where's the money?"
Mike looked up at Josie, and before she could reply, he pressed Steve's hand against the bars again. Obscenities filled the air like foul smoke before Steve gasped, "Don't tell him, Josie!" Josie could bear no more. "There's money in the cellar. Come here, I'll show you." She led him to the cellar door, and as he stepped through, she struck him with all her might in the small of the back. There was a grunt as he stumbled, and she slammed the door shut and bolted it, before running back to the living room. She was just in time to see a flame burst out of the curtain. In an instant, the little orange snake of fire spread to the ceiling, and the room filled with smoke. Josie ran towards Brian's armchair and tried to pull it towards the door. It was too heavy. She felt the heat on her face. The light from the flames was blinding. Groping her way towards where Steve lay on the carpet, she grabbed his shoulder. "Steve, you have to help me get the chair out." His voice was croaky. "I can't move. You get out now while you can. I've called the fire brigade." On hands and knees, she made her way towards the front door. She felt the rush of cold air as she pulled it open, heard the sound of the flames roaring upwards, heard bangs and crackles behind her. Someone was wrapping her in a blanket, drawing her away, while she tried to scream, but could only cough. She became aware of someone asking if anyone was in the house. "Two people," she said, "a man in the front room and another in the cellar. And please, please get the big armchair out. If anything happens to me..."
"Never mind your armchair, love."
"Please, it's worth more than you think. It belonged to my husband." No one was listening. Helpless tears ran down her face as she watched the flames, now filling the upstairs windows, and saw two stretchers carried from the house. Steve gave her a thumbs-up sign as he was put into the ambulance and an oxygen mask was placed over his face. All Josie could think was, "I'm losing everything." Later that evening, she sat on Karen's leather sofa, the little warm body of her grandson nestled beside her. He had comforted his grandma as best he could by drawing a friendly monster for her and giving her a hug. Now that Josie had no more tears left, a curious calm descended. Her legacy for George had gone up in smoke. All the banknotes, concealed in the padding of the armchair, reduced to ashes. But with them, she realized, had gone the guilt which had kept her awake so many nights. Finally, she was free of her past. She stroked George's hair and smiled.
If Anything Happens to Me is copyrighted by Helena Edwards. Music for this podcast is by Jeffrey Toy and was performed by Sir Vivian Dunn and the Light Music Society Orchestra. It was obtained from the Community Audio section of the Internet Archive. Mixing for the podcast was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.